all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wiscommon Sense for this Thursday, April 6th. It is nice to be back on the radio. We'll talk to Aaron Zommers about that in just a sec. But first, coming up this morning, this is 40. Not the movie. This is 40% voter turnout. This is what it looks like in Wisconsin, which is a sky-high figure for a spring election. But between the repeal of abortion rights and no shortage of other extreme actions, Republicans are finally learning that independent voters have the potential to show up in record numbers at every election going forward. So the question has to be asked, will the GOP moderate its course or will it double down? We will talk to Joe Zepecki to provide some perspective on the election results and the path going forward. Also this hour, we spoke with State Representative Kalen Haywood about how the governor's budget proposal could address a host of housing issues around the state. And then the theme of our second hour is to stay just a little bit longer. Hearing that Wisconsin physicians were considering a run for the exits, voters made a choice Tuesday that sends a message to docs. Stay put for now and let the legal fight over the 1849 abortion ban get to this newly progressive state Supreme Court. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will have our weekly Hometown Health segment. It features Dr. Ann Helms, a neurologist and advocate for healthcare reform. And they'll talk about what this week's election means for the literal healthcare of our state. So with the election behind us, our call of the day asks you for a single word. What's the one word that sums up your feelings about the results of the Wisconsin Supreme Court election? You can comment on Facebook over at the Up North News Facebook page, or the page for Civic Media, or for Bull Falls Radio, or you can call us. Two studio lines, pick one, they both work. Aaron will pick you up either way. The main line is 844-967-2789. We also have an Up North line, 715-388-7155. We have that special number because Civic Media is now a growing network around Wisconsin, and sometimes we have more than one show on at a time at different stations. And so when Chad Holmes has his show up in Wausau, when you've got Todd Alba doing his show, while Earl Ingram is doing his show over in the Milwaukee area, we've got a couple of different phone numbers that we have to use for you to get through. On this particular show, you can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, because Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, but we appreciate using their real estate for 2 hours every weekday morning. Find the work that we do at upnorthnewswi.com or search for Up North News WI on social media. And this is the point where we tell the tale of yesterday. Mr. Zommers, good morning. How are you?
Better today.
Better today. Again, if you're listening on the radio, it is nice to be back. If you are watching or listening on Facebook, you already know the story that Aaron sent me a text around, what, 5:45 or so. Basically, the gist of the text was, uh-oh.
Yeah, pretty
right?
much.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, I'll keep you updated. And then I proceeded to send nothing else because there were no updates.
There were no updates. The thunderstorms that went through the Madison area before perhaps did something with the equipment. We don't know. We just know that we started the show on the internet only through Facebook and Twitter, and kept waiting for the radio station to rejoin us. And you guys finally got on the air. What was it? Sometime late in the 8 o'clock hour, I think.
No, it was almost exactly when your show ended. So right before 8 o'clock.
Of course it was. All right. Well, so anyway, we had our first internet only show, which is nice. I mean, it's nice to know that we can do it, but we'd much rather talk to everybody through radio stations located all across Wisconsin in a network that continues to grow. But Aaron, you look like you've aged just a little bit since yesterday, but way to stick with it.
Yeah. I'm still here. We're good.
Yeah, that's right. So we are back, and we are very happy to have everybody here. Let's see. We've got just a couple of minutes here before we take a break, and then we'll talk to Representative Kalen Haywood about housing provisions in Governor Evers' budget proposal. So I'll take this time to do a little sports because there was a matinee game. The only time you hear matinee anymore, we don't use that word talking about movies like the olden days. But there was matinee baseball, afternoon game against the Mets over at American Family Field. The game was tied at 6 apiece to head into the ninth inning, and Garrett Mitchell untied it. He first started off his ninth inning at bat, bottom of the ninth, trying to get a hit via the bunt, but he fell behind 1-2 in the count. So instead, he swung and blasted a game-winning shot into the right field seats. Brewers get the win 7-6 and a sweep in that three-game series with the Mets. Excuse me. So that is now a five-game winning streak for the Brewers since losing the season opener to the Cubs. The Brewers are off today. St. Louis comes into town, and the Cardinals will start a three-game series with the Brewers over the weekend. Tomorrow, Brandon Woodruff will be on the mound tomorrow for the Brewers. Now, as for the Bucks, again, the regular season is nearly over, and last night the Bucks wrapped up the top seed in the NBA playoffs as they beat the Chicago Bulls in Milwaukee last night 105-92. The Bucks were down 10 points in the third quarter, but then went on a 15-0 run to overcome that deficit. Giannis sat out the game with a sore right knee. Not unexpected, given that, you know, there's nothing to play for now until the playoffs get here. So on Friday will be the last regular season home game against the Memphis Grizzlies. Then on Sunday in Toronto, that'll wrap things up for the regular season. Bring on the playoffs. As my old friend Jim McAteer used to say, time to lace up the black shoes. It's playoff time. All right, we will talk about the different ways that housing is an issue across Wisconsin and what Governor Evers is proposing to do about it with State Representative Kalen Haywood from Milwaukee coming up next. This is Up North News Radio for a Thursday. We had this one ready to go yesterday, but of course we had technical difficulties, and so I didn't get to wish a happy birthday to Pharrell Williams turning the big 5-0 yesterday. So we had a couple of Pharrell songs that we were set to play for you. Thought we'd carry over one or two of them into today. We're going to talk to Representative Kalen Haywood in just a sec, and then in our next segment, Joe Zepecki, in both cases talking about how we go forward from here, whether politically or from a policy standpoint. Representative Haywood will talk about housing issues in the budget proposal coming up. But before that, I just wanted to share one more election take. That would be from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist Dan Bice, who asks, who are the biggest winners and losers? But of course, he phrases it, who are the biggest winners and sore losers in the election? And to no one's surprise who is aware of this, most of the chatter has been about Dan Kelly and being perhaps the biggest, sorest loser in Wisconsin election history. I mean, single-handedly, he has handed progressives two state Supreme Court seats when he lost to Jill Karofsky and got booted from the court in 2020, and when he lost this week to Janet Protasiewicz, again, for a conservative seat that was up and now flips because of Dan Kelly. Might he show some contrition? No. He made no congratulatory phone call. He did not acknowledge the will of the voters in his concession speech. He offered nothing but insults and vitriol, leading a lot of his supporters to second guess themselves as far as whether they should have, supported somebody so amazingly uncharismatic and bitter. Bice goes on to talk about the loser in this race in his mind was nonpartisan politics, because the state Supreme Court race is officially nonpartisan. But we also know that thanks to changes that former Governor Scott Walker and Republicans lawmakers made back in 2015, these races became nonpartisan in name only. And so Republicans did that, figuring that they had the money to put behind these court races, and it worked for a lot of years. But progressives have gotten their act together and found out that they could raise money as too. So the the column by Dan Bice goes on to list some of the major donors on the Democratic side, as well as on the Republican side, who poured money into this race, making it the most expensive judicial election in American history. So we got that going for us, I guess, you know. He also points out that two real losers this week were current conservative Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley and Appeals Court Judge Shelley Grogan, who took the unusual step of having a public spat with Jennifer Doro during the Supreme Court primary, and that certainly didn't make her look good at all. And one more note to pass on here. Dane County cast more votes in the election, 240,000, than Milwaukee County, with 233,000. Dane County is looking at the rest of Republicans who are trying to negate Madison and Dane County, say they don't matter, and are saying, yeah, we matter, especially when we show up to the polls. We're Wisconsinites too. One person, one vote, and look how things happened. So that's enough of the election for the moment here. Let's turn back to the state budget, what things will be in it. The Joint Finance Committee is taking public opinion right now. They also have Governor Evers' bill in front of him, and that includes a provision, some various provisions about housing that we want to talk to with a state representative from the Milwaukee area. Representative Kaylin Haywood, nice of you to be here on Up North News Radio. Thank you.
Hey, Pat, man, thank you for having me here today. I'm glad I could be here with you all.
I want to find out more about what's being proposed in housing on a couple of different fronts here. There's obviously a lot of talk about affordable housing, affordable workforce housing, and then there's also concerns between renters, tenants, and landlords, which we may get into as well. But really, affordable housing is something that gets talked about everywhere. The city of Milwaukee, from the city of Milwaukee to the smallest villages that still are looking to house a workforce. How would you best describe the affordable housing issue all across Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think that when we talk about housing as an issue, affordable housing, workforce housing, is an issue that we are facing in all 72 counties. Like you said, in communities big and small, whether that's in Milwaukee, where we are seeing a uptick, I think it's nationally an uptick in housing pricing, whether it's to be a homeowner or to be a renter, where we have a housing stock needs to be revitalized, or in rural Wisconsin, where some of that same issue with folks trying to find homes and afford homes, but also just not having the housing stock. And that impacts us both in urban and rural communities, especially when it comes to recruiting folks that want to come here and grow families and live and work in Wisconsin, but also when it comes to retaining our Wisconsin families and workers who are educated here or raised here. How do we keep them here and make Wisconsin attractive? So housing is just so important in that, but also housing plays into, I think, every aspect, whether it's health, whether it's schooling, whether it's the jobs are offered. Housing just plays a huge role in all that happening.
And we should point out that, I mean, if you go to Madison, for example, it looks like the buildings are sprouting like weeds. There's a lot of housing there. There's a lot of retail space down below. But again, that's unique to Madison. That doesn't do anything if a company in, you know, Marshfield or Marinette or someplace else wants to expand. And so in your view, in the view of Governor Evers and others, this isn't something that the private sector is necessarily going to address. This is something that public sectors in Wisconsin municipalities are really concerned about.
Yeah, I think it's a private and public sector issue, but the public sector has to be a huge part of that. I think we want to see the growth that's happening in Madison, happen throughout the entire state. That's why you see things like the governor investing in workforce housing in the executive budget. The governor proposed $150 million from the GPR dollars to invest in just workforce housing around the states. Around the state, that money will go directly to municipalities and communities to really focus and target how do you build workforce housing in those communities. We're also making an investment of $200 million that goes to municipalities as well for properties that are not being used or so that it will be restored and revitalized on the Mitchell, like in Milwaukee. We have a lot of old housing stock that could be great, beautiful homes, if they have the proper investment. So that those are just two ways that the governor and I both agree that we need to give the communities, the municipalities, the counties, whether it's Milwaukee or Marionette or Sister Bay, Wisconsin, give them the tools and the investment they need to be able to expand and attract folks there through workforce housing programs.
And that's a very important point, that there's a lot that can be done through renovation and through restoration. And similarly, this funding isn't just for the housing stock itself, but some of the infrastructure that helps support it, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, that's also important too. Folks just for a, I think my district, I have residents who have been in their homes for decades. They have helped build the neighborhoods to be what they are. And a lot of them are retired now. They are retired police officers, retired school teachers who are on fixed incomes now. They have worked so hard to build those neighborhoods up, but they can't afford to always keep reinvesting and keep with inflation happening now, with the uptick in just building costs and contractors. They can't afford to keep up with it. And we don't want to see those homes deteriorate, but also, you know, there's other communities like in my district as well, where you have 5206, where there is a good number of housing stock that the city actually owns and also other private homeowners own that is sitting there. They are great opportunities for growth and development. And that could be a beautiful home for someone one day for a family to raise a family there.
And also on the topic of infrastructure, it includes things like for municipalities that have to work on sidewalks, water and sewer. And representative, you're going to have to listen to me give my spiel that I've given, it feels like 1,000 times, but I tell people, hey, we can talk about high tech all we want. We can talk about broadband all we want, but it's not going to help you if the sewer line down your street is 100 years old and needs to be replaced. It's never sexy, but it's got to get done.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that people don't think about that either. You know, we talk about clean water, for example. Talk about making sure folks have access to clean drinking water in their homes. It's important now while we revitalize these homes. And I think when you look at the executive budget, the government realizes that housing is not a one-size-fits-all blanket fix, that it's a multi-pronged solution. And part of that is the infrastructure piece to make sure folks have access to clean drinking water.
Let me talk about one more thing related to funding, and then we're going to get just into the condition of who all has helped buy this. And that would be the creation of a veteran rental assistance program that the governor is proposing funding at $1 million per year. And even though the topic does come up from time to time, I think people would still be shocked at the number of veterans in Wisconsin and across the country who are either homeless or housing deficient and need this kind of aid. And it seems it's as terrible as it sounds.
Yeah. You know, you think about any veterans issues. We have folks who signed up, some who were drafted from back in the day, but a lot of folks who volunteered and signed up to serve and protect the country overseas, here on our U.S. soil, who put their lives on the line to protect the country and protect the American dream. And so the thing about them coming back home now to the communities that they fought for and the country they fought for, and not having the resources and tools they need to thrive and live a good life, is a way bigger issue than folks talk about. So I think that's why it's important that you see that $1 million investment in the budget. Not only does it provide resources and support to veterans who are trying to get housing, maintain housing, it also starts the conversation for folks to look at that. And how can we help support veterans, make sure that they also have access to clean, quality, affordable housing that they sometimes struggle to. You know, you ask everyday person, they think veterans struggle when it comes to getting access to housing. They will probably tell you no, but that is not the reality. So I think this is a good one of the good first steps to having that conversation and dialogue and figuring out how to deliver those support and resources.
So we've talked about veterans and housing. We've talked about the workforce and affordable housing. Now let's talk about at-risk populations. And the governor notes in his plan the countless instances of mothers, individuals with disabilities, survivors of domestic and intimate partner violence, low-income individuals and families, young people and students, older adults, and others who face eviction, who sometimes are taken advantage of by predatory landlords who might not have, you know, access to legal counsel and such. So while workforce housing is important, it's also important to note the many at-risk populations who could use an advocate when it comes to keeping a roof over their heads. And at the same time, I mean, we're not talking about stiffing landlords here, but we're talking about making sure this is a win-win for the tenant, the landlord, and avoiding homelessness that can come with eviction or foreclosure.
Yeah, I think some of the you see in the governor's proposal when it comes to landlord versus tenant rights, it's not to make one side be able to win over the other. It's to make sure that all the players at the table are having a fair shot. We know there are thousands of great homeowners and landlords around the state who do good work, provide a great property, and are good partners in the agreement. There's also renters who are great renters and good partners, and they're also the other side of both of those coins. But then we see way more often that there are folks who are renters because they cannot own a home, because they don't have the financial readiness to own a home just yet, or don't know the process, or they may be a first-generation homebuyer, they do go through the process. We see those folks who a lot of time come from disadvantaged backgrounds, especially when it comes to economic status. They are faced with these sometimes unfair and wrong evictions, and they really don't know the process. There's so many times I'm knocking on doors, talking to residents around Wisconsin that They just don't, they share a story of what happened 10 years ago. They share a story of what happened 15 years ago. And, you know, now it's too late. And now they've been able to get back on track 10 years later. But there are folks who are going through this process every day. And eviction is a story that too far too many people face and encounter, but it's not a rare thing. So I think this is important to make sure we have those statutory changes that allow local governments to get more involved, to be able to protect those renters in the process. And,
Representative Kaylin Hayward, thank you so much for the time and for filling us in on the background of this issue on Up North News Radio. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
And we'll be back in just a bit to have our usual weekly discussion with political consultant, strategist, and friend Joe Zepecki about the election results and what it means for Wisconsin's political future next. You're Up North. If it's Thursday morning, 6:33 in the morning, it's Joe Zepecki. I would never ask him to get up this early on a Thursday morning. So through the magic of Wednesday afternoon conversation, here's Joe fresh off election night. Joe, how are you?
Pat knows I need my beauty sleep and can tell that I didn't get enough of it last night.
Nobody does on election night. No.
It was a great day for democracy. It was a great day for the rule of law. I am one of many, many people who are very excited this morning, including the sweet little old lady who is checking out at the same time as me at Pet Supplies Plus earlier today, who was remarking to the teller that she was in such a great mood because her candidate for Supreme Court won, and the clerk responded, "Mine too," and the sweet little old lady ended it with, "I'm not very religious, but I feel like saying thank you, Jesus."
I think there's a lot of that going around the state today. But, you know, let's be honest. The AP called this thing, what, by 9:30? I was shocked.
Oh, I think it was before 9. It was 8:53. I had to go back and check my text messages at 8:30. I had seen enough and was telling loved ones, you don't even need to, like, tune in. There's no reason to be anxious tonight.
You said this at 8:30?
8:30. I have the text message to my parents to prove it. And listen, this was a decisive victory, the most decisive victory in Wisconsin politics since Senator Tammy Baldwin was reelected in 2018, and similar winning coalition, right? We saw in the WOW counties, Republicans just can't get it together. Protasiewicz won the city of Waukesha, which is fantastic.
I'm sorry, what? What?
Yep. 50.1% of the vote in Waukesha, wow. The city of, goes to Janet Protasiewicz. In the Bow counties, Brown, Outagamie, Winnebago, another big chunk of votes. Protasiewicz won all of them. The last Democratic-supported candidate to do that in Wisconsin was Tammy Baldwin. In western Wisconsin, the 3rd District, which is now represented by Congressman Derek Van Orden, Protasiewicz also won by 10 points. I mean, this was, from tip to tail, a blowout, a rout, and hats off to the campaign that Protasiewicz and all of her allies ran.
This was, of course, the first big state Supreme Court election after the Dobbs decision. So I have to ask it this way, not meaning to sound like a negative Nancy, but obviously there was a lot invested in this race. Is this a sign of things to come, or is this a one and done situation and complacency is going to come back the next time we're doing this, which is when progressive Ann Walsh Bradley runs in 2025?
I don't think so. I mean, here's the reality. The overturning of Roe in the Dobbs decision was a thunderclap that may have changed American politics up and down the ballot for years to come. And so let's break this apart and talk just Wisconsin. For example, we are hopeful, we are optimistic this morning that with a 4-3 progressive majority, there will soon be clarity in Wisconsin around women's freedom to access the reproductive health care they need. That will likely come in a case that is currently making its way through the courts, which seeks to basically throw out that 1849 law and say that a law passed under Scott Walker essentially decreed that there is a 20-week abortion ban. That is not not a crazy idea or notion. It is sort of Roe-like in that way. So that'll be good. It'll be a policy win. Wisconsin will be a safer place for moms. That's a good thing. Then to the politics of it. Republicans have a problem. They have a problem with women voters, with young voters, with Dobbs dads. The problem is this. Even if Republicans here in Wisconsin don't lift a finger in the legislature and the Supreme Court updates this law for them, they are still going to have to deal with extreme elements within their party, including down in the great state of Florida, which are going to do things like enact 6-week abortion bans, which they're able to do because Roe is no longer the law of the land. And so the political problem for Republicans is real, it is acute, and it is not going anywhere because, newsflash, Roe will not be codified federally under a Republican-controlled House, which is what we have right now. So this issue isn't going anywhere.
No, and it is. We talk about how the passage of the Civil Rights Act, it was mentioned at the time, I forget who said it famously, but as a Democrat said, I fear we've lost the South. And, you know, Nixon came up with the Southern Strategy and everything happened from there. So when you mentioned thunderclap, I thought of that because, yes, similarly, that Dobbs decision is what people are going to look back on as something that equally changed the political landscape for at least the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think heading into last November's elections, the impact of the Dobbs decision was undersold. And then look what happened, a overperformance by Democrats, an underperformance by Republicans. And I think there's a tendency by a lot of folks in the media and sort of super consumers of news and information to want to get to, okay, we had that election about abortion. What's the next one going to be about? And the one after that, they want to turn the page and go to the next chapter in the book. And the reality is that the reality hasn't changed for Wisconsin women, for families trying to start families, worried about, you know, problematic pregnancies that they may have had in the past and whether they should try again. This impacts people's lives. And every week that has gone by, someone else in your life or in your circle has become pregnant and maybe is facing those fears for the first time. Oh my God, what if I'm not in Milwaukee or Madison and there's a health crisis and I'm in some community where they don't have 3 attending physicians who can make an emergency decision to save the life of a mother? That's a problem.
All right, let's turn the page and let's look at the special election in the 8th Senate District, because I have been accused of being overly cynical, overly negative. But there is a part of me, and you mentioned the extreme elements in the party, that the scenario that I currently think is most likely is that Assembly Republicans will initiate impeachment proceedings against who? I don't know. Will it be Evers? Will it be Protasiewicz? I don't know. They'll kick it to the Senate. That there will be one or two senators, you know, on the Republican side that say, no, this is a bridge too far. So maybe nobody's going to be removed from office. But I don't see what is stopping enough legislative Republicans in the Assembly and Senate from doing this anyway, because, you know, they're in what I would call the jerk playbook. It's just the newest page, and why wouldn't they want to play it? But, you know, go ahead and tell me I'm being too cynical.
I am cautiously optimistic that we are not going that route. Among the reasons, this morning, AJ Byatt-Poor, a Milwaukee journalist, asked Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu if the Senate will consider impeaching Janet Protasiewicz. No, is what Leader LeMahieu said.
I'm sorry. Scott Walker was asked repeatedly in 2014 about right to work. Oh, no, that's a terrible idea. I wouldn't do that. That's not a priority. The bill passed 2 weeks after he got sworn into office, or was it 2 days? So, yeah, he can say no, because that's what they do.
I am cautiously optimistic. You can feel however you want to feel, Pat. But I think one of the takeaways may be that maybe – after Democrats and candidates supported by Democrats have now won 14 of the last 17 elections in Wisconsin, Republicans will finally get the message. Maybe the 14th kick from the donkey really does change the dynamic. And they understand that this Trump era divisive, nasty, rude politics of tearing each other down and not working together, maybe that isn't a winning strategy for Republicans. And if they gum up the works of government and start threatening impeachment and doing impeachment, you know, on trumped up charges, pun intended, I don't think voters are going to respond to that. And so today I am cautiously optimistic that they will heed that lesson that the voters clearly want them to hear.
All right. So we kind of sort of turn the page. Well, actually, before we do, I want to stick with the Supreme Court just a little bit longer. We know the 1849 abortion ban case is eventually going to work its way through. But what do you suspect will be the next steps in terms of fair maps and gerrymandering? Is there a group that's prepared to bring a new lawsuit the day after the new court begins its term in August? Or how do you see this playing out?
I think it's too soon to tell, and I don't want to speculate because and part of that is the caution that I have been telling everyone. We now have a path to fairer maps. Even under fairer maps, Democrats are not assured anything. There may be more competitive districts like the 8th Senate district, but Democrats are going to have to go out and win those races. And so my message to Democrats and people who support Democratic Party is we have got to get laser focused at the legislative level on investing in these races, on, you know, training up these candidates, training up the staff that work for them. You know, it is easy after a 10 or 11 point victory statewide to go, okay, what's next? Job done. We can't do that. This is an ongoing fight for progress. And we may have elected Janet Protasiewicz to the Supreme Court last night, but you know what we didn't do? We didn't expand Medicaid. We didn't raise the minimum wage. We didn't legalize cannabis. There are so many opportunities that this state has to grow and move forward, but the work is not done. It continues.
Joe Specky's with us, and now we're going to try to turn the page because even on Wednesday, the legislature's Joint Finance Committee began the first of its public hearings around the state on the state budget, taking public input on to where we go from here. We've spent this week looking at one part of the budget about all the various housing provisions that Governor Evers has put in about, you know, more affordable workforce housing, renovating old stock, working on infrastructure. None of this stuff is going to be adopted by Republicans in the state budget. I'm quite confident of that. But you know, these are measures that are going to get discussed from now till whenever it passes. To what degree should folks feel like they can give their input and that, you know, their Republican assembly rep or state senator, as the case may be, will take those ideas seriously?
Well, you have to try. Politicians are self-interested animals. And if they hear from enough of their constituents with reasonable enough arguments, in some cases tailored to the values and worldviews of those incumbent office holders, all things are possible. Right. I mean, would you have thought that we'd be sitting here this budget cycle and Republicans would be talking about extending Medicaid coverage for moms and babies? I wouldn't have thought that because for the last 12 years, every time the conversation of expanding Medicaid at all has come up, they've said no. It's taken 12 years. They're still not talking about doing the full expansion, but there is an ability to move the needle here, to bend the arc of the moral universe a little bit more towards justice. Hey, we saw that in an election last night. We saw it, we see it all the time. And so we've got to stay engaged, stay focused. We can't sort of go, okay, the race is over, and now we're going to get what we're going to get. Stay engaged, stay locked in.
Okay, I'm going to ask you for my last question, a very bold prediction. Is this the last term for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss?
No.
No?
No. He enjoys it.
Look and go, look, we've lost yet another statewide election. Because as soon as you said they might be giving a little on Medicaid, I thought, well, gosh, is this the end of the ride for, you know, is how much more of the Scott Walker machine is starting to fall apart?
I think their Medicaid play is a misguided belief that they can minimize the damage that the Dobbs decision is doing to them if they show a little more compassion and empathy for moms and babies. This ain't it.
Joe Specky, thank you so much as always. Get some rest. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
And yet I am still blown away by learning that Janet Protasiewicz carried the city of Waukesha, 50.1%. And I recall that a past chair for Waukesha County Democrats, also a high-ranking party official for Times, he isn't one now, but he put up a post about how Waukesha County Democratic Party chairs always passed along a message to one another about what an uphill fight they have and that the change may not come during their time, but it's about laying the groundwork for the future, for the next chair, for the next county party. And I've been to Waukesha County Democratic Party meetings, and their rooms, their headquarters have gotten progressively bigger. More people are in attendance. And the once very bright red counties of Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington are not nearly as bright. There's some shades of purple coming in as more people look at a Republican Party going farther and farther to the extreme right and saying that it no longer represents their values. We'll take a break, a little music break. This day in history, all coming up in just a couple of minutes. You're up north. You know, Erin, it doesn't matter how many times Lyerly's just going to cut it closer and closer every time. I believe we had 8 seconds to spare before she chimed in during this commercial break.
My microphone is actually in my lap.
Hey, whatever works.
Whatever it takes, girl. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Oh, isn't it a beautiful day? The sun is shining. It's going to be fairly warm. I'm so happy.
You're just happy to be home after a long period away. And we're going to talk more about that in our next hour. Doctors who might be staying in Wisconsin after all, after this week's elections. But first, this day in history. And we started the segment here with Billy Joel's Piano Man. His very first top 40 hit. It came in at number 33 on this day in 1974. But marked the arrival of Billy Joel to the top 40 charts, a place that he became very familiar with over the years. This is one of those great, you know, where everybody in the bar has had just enough lubrication that it's like a big group sing along.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen.
You've done it.
I've done it, yes. Billy Dee Williams is 86 today. Actor, singer, writer, best known perhaps for playing Lando Calrissian in Star Wars. Actor Paul Rudd is 54. Candace Cameron Bure is 47. Robert Glasper is 45. I'm not familiar with him. Innovative modern jazz pianist who incorporates a lot of hip-hop elements. Erin, if you put this in, I'm going to assume that you have all of Robert Glasper's CDs and albums.
I wouldn't go that far, but I've definitely listened to him some, and yeah, I recommend him.
Okay. So this is Billy Joel from 1974. Here's the thing. We've never had a threefer on music history. Also on this day in 1974, ABBA became European stars overnight by winning the Eurovision Song Contest on this day in 1974. Oh, look, an episode of Mamma Mia has broken out here in the studio.
Oh, have you seen the movie with Will Ferrell and Rachel, whatever? It's about Eurovision, and it's kind of the ABBA story, but it's adorable.
No.
And their famous song is Ya Ya Ding Dong. It's so cute.
Well, now I've got something to watch this weekend. And also on this day in 1974, on Soul Train, which usually uses lip syncing and pre-recorded tracks for their guests, Al Green with a rare live performance of Here I Am, Come and Take Me, which a lot of you younger folks probably have only heard the UB40 version. You got to get the Al Green version.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe that it's real. The way that you made me feel.
There's just something wrong with you that doesn't get you moving when you hear that, when you hear Al Green's version of it. On this day in 19...
feeling a little funky this morning, Pat.
That's exactly. On this day in 1973, the American League began using the designated hitter. Many people derided it. They didn't like the idea, but guess what? It's here to stay now in the American and the National Leagues. On this day in 1983, Ronald Reagan's Interior Secretary, James Watt, remember that bright light bulb? He canceled an appearance by the Beach Boys at Washington, D.C.'s Independence Day festivities, infamously stating the band would attract, quote, an undesirable element. Undesirable element, Kristen Lyerly, is now going to provide the rebuttal for the Beach Boys.
What?
The Beach Boys? I mean, now they're seen as clean, wholesome, clean-cut, wholesome, all-American as they get. But as late as the early 80s, some people saw them as, you know, long-haired hippies.
Mm-hmm. Get a haircut.
Yeah, exactly. Normally, I start this segment, I go way back if there's a hit from back then, but I kind of really wanted to start with Piano Man. So how this otherwise would have started is to play a song recorded on this day in 1925. It was all the rage, but we don't have any guests named Susie, so we're just going to play it here anyway for Kristen.
If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, 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 what a girl. There's none so classy as this fair lassie. Oh,
Eddie Cantor, 1925. And again, I'm realizing that since I'm part of the last generation that watched, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, like 5 hours worth of Saturday morning cartoons,
yes,
lots of Bugs Bunny cartoons. And of course, these things included a lot of vaudeville stars like Eddie Cantor. So there's no chance anybody, this is the last time most of us will ever hear that song. Let's put it that way.
And it's not because of James Watt.
And no. And finally, on this day in 1968, the number one album was the soundtrack from The Graduate, propelled largely by Simon and Garfunkel and this hit. Oh, I got to talk over the ramp here. I thought we were ready to go here. You can tell it's Mrs. Robinson, right? There's a lot of DDDs and a lot of do-do-dos. Trust me, they sang Mrs. Robinson a little further down the line. I should have moved the needle on the record. And we established it. Aaron does know about needles and records. He actually has vinyl and a record player and everything.
And I vinyl use it, too.
Vinyl is cool again.
Yeah, crazy. On this day in 1992, Annie Lennox released Diva, her first solo album. And it features the theme song of frequent guest Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski with Walking on Broken Glass. And one more that Aaron throws in just for me to guess if it's real or not. On this day in 1993, it says here, Tool released their debut album, Undertow. Real or fake?
Oh, you got to guess.
Real.
I'm going to go with real because you wouldn't dare put anything fake in my notes over here. So, yeah,
well,
I'm going
to
guess real. But it always makes me wonder just the same. So there we go. Little music.
Are we not going to get any Tool?
I did not set aside any Tool. So you know that Aaron's going to be looking now to expose me to the musical wonder that is Tool. So we are going to have Hometown Health at 7:30. Tell us who our guest is going to be.
We are going to talk with Milwaukee neurologist, Dr. Ann Helms. Now that the election is over, what's next for the House of Medicine and what can we expect to see in our legislature and as patients here in Wisconsin?
And I think one of the things that you and I will talk about at the start of the next hour is, you know, where, how soon we think the 1849 abortion ban is going to come before this newly progressive Supreme Court. Is it going to, you know, figuratively stem the bleeding, perhaps literally, but I'm talking more about doctors leaving Wisconsin and the state of healthcare. Because once again, in your case, I mean, you're practicing outside the state these days because of, you know, the political situation that we have in the state. So we'll talk more about that next hour. Do we have Tool, Mr. Sommers?
Sure do.
Hey, this is kind of catchy.
I think right. You would like it, Pat.
I think so. Boy, if only I could make time, but I'm busy watching YouTube, you know, Eddie Cantor videos from the 1920s.
If so. You knew Patty like I know Patty. So
with that, we'll take this break for news and more with Kristen Lyerly and guest coming up in our 7 o'clock hour. You're up, North.